executive order began to be developed before I ever became the Secretary of Homeland Security, before my confirmation. The desire was to get it out. The thinking was to get it out quick so that potentially people that might be coming here to harm us would not take advantage of some period of time that they could jump on an airplane and get here. In retrospect, I should have, this is all on me, by the way, I should have delayed it just a bit so that I could talk to members of Congress, particularly the leadership of committees like this, to prepare them for what was coming.
Of course, General Kelly, who's the Secretary of Homeland Security, testifying today at his confirmation hearing on Capitol Hill. No, he's already confirmed. He's just testifying. It seems like no one's confirmed yet to me. But, yeah, he's just testifying about the travel ban that is temporary in nature. And he said, yeah, I mean, I wish done things a little differently, but seems like he's on top of it now. But this Ninth Circuit argument's not going to go well for the administration. I'll be shocked if it – I mean, I will be extremely surprised if the Ninth Circuit rules either today or later on this week – that they are going to vacate the district court stay, the Seattle judge who stayed the Trump executive order, and they just come along and say no, we're gonna vacate that stay, and meanwhile you can argue the case on the merits, but we can't keep this this stay in effect. I just don't think they're gonna do that. Knowing the circuit the way I know it, it is judicial activism 101 for these people. Yeah, 185-year-old, 146-year-old, and 166-year-old. And as far as I can tell, none of them are great judges. I mean, they're just not. They're certainly not the type of appellate judges I would expect Donald Trump to put on the appellate courts all over this country. This will continue for some time. But what lessons can be learned from the Reagan first-term White House? There are rivalries. There always are rivalries inside the West Wing. But the methodical way things are decided, rolled out, produced, if you will, to the public. How important is all of this? Joining us now, I'm delighted he's with us, Craig Shirley, the author of multiple Reagan biographies. He has yet another biography coming. Can I have my copy of Reagan Rising, please? I have the galley of Reagan Rising, which I joked with Craig yesterday on email. I said, Craig, is Reagan going to be resurrecting soon? I mean, you've covered every aspect of the Reagan life. I mean, Reagan in the crib.
That's an interesting point. Doug Brinkley once said, by the way, good afternoon. Howdy, how are you? Doug Brinkley once said that the realm of Reagan scholarship is just beginning to open up. There are a lot of things about Ronald Reagan that still haven't been written about, the war on communism or the Screen Actors Guild or his deep study of his days in Hollywood, the evolution of his philosophy. There are a lot of things that still haven't been written, Laura.
I know, I'm just teasing you. I mean,
the way I tease you. Is, writing these books, it keeps me off the streets and out of the pool hall.
Yeah, well, it keeps you out of Washington, which you hate anyway. So
yes.
that's good. So Reagan Rising, the decisive years, 76 to 80. You bet it's the decisive years when he was still being ridiculed by the elites and almost won the nomination in 76. Well, we're going to have you on when the book comes out in a few weeks. Can't wait.
Great.
It's fantastic. I mean, you're such a great writer. This is going to be a huge bestseller. Now more than ever. Reagan, now more than ever. Let's talk about what we can learn, perhaps, about the pitfalls of these rivalries in the West Wing, or at least in the organizational structure. Reagan had very different personalities in the first term than he did in the second term. Tell us what we can learn from the history that you've written so well about.
Thank you. I think that the president, what we learned from Reagan, he was a strong inner-directed man. Strong inner-directed men are not afraid to surround themselves by strong inner-directed men and women. And if you think of the really good presidents or even great presidents down through history, Laura, is that they were great men who were surrounded by great men. You can't think about Abraham Lincoln without thinking about John Hay or Ulysses S. Grant or Seward or some others. You can't think about Washington without thinking about Franklin and Adams and Hamilton and Jefferson. And it was the same thing with Reagan. Is that George Shultz and Gene Kirkpatrick And yes, Jim Baker and yes, Ed Meese were all strong, successful, inner-directed individuals who understood, you know, what Reagan's goal was that, and when he went in, he had a plan for the resurrection of the American economy and the destruction of Soviet communism, and they worked the plan for 8 years.
So, thinking about the characters who are in place now, we were talking earlier to Byron York, who I'm glad he mentioned this because I knew you were coming on. I'm going to play the sound and maybe you can react. Let's listen.
There has been, since the transition, a lot of talk of a kind of Baker and Meese conflict inside the Trump administration, going back to the conflict between James A. Baker, the sort of pragmatist in the Reagan White House, and Ed Meese, the conservative in the White House. And there was this kind of fight over whose people get in, and I guess you can say Baker eventually won. But you have the same fight with Steve Bannon, on one side representing the populist side, and Reince Priebus representing the establishment side.
Is that fair?
It's a nice story. It's at least in part mythology. I've been with Jim and Ed together, and I've seen them warmly embrace each other. Reagan wrote in his diaries, he said that Jim Baker never tried or asked me to do anything that I didn't believe in, and was always supportive of my goals for the presidency. So there you have it from Reagan's mouth himself, saying that Baker was supportive. Look, when you get in the White House, as you know, you were there, it's turf, it's ego, it's Washington, you know, you're at ground zero for the world, you know, and there's bound to be conflict, but hopefully out of conflict comes resolution, as it does in every administration.
In the effort, which is pathological at this point, to demonize Steve Bannon, I have never, actually, because I think the folks who are listening now might not have heard me mention this earlier. Let me just play one of the sound bites. Craig, I'll play it for you as well. Should we play the Donny Deutsch or da-da-da-da-da? Yeah, let's play Scarborough 2. You're going to be it's 2 and 3. Put them together, James, and then we'll play them for Craig. This is Joe Scarborough positively obsessed with Steve Bannon. Let's listen.
The cover of Politico magazine, what Steve Bannon.
And they're big on
you
photos.
That's it.
It's like a huge
that?
Magazine.
But you know, who's the president here? And
the paper version's amazing.
Selling the Bannon brand. This is what this guy.
That's in every airport when you get off the Delta shuttle. You see that.
There's been reporting that Donald Trump is annoyed by the Time cover for all
no,
the reasons we've laid out.
He's fine with it.
I'm sure he's fine with it. I'm just telling you, if I got into Congress and my chief of staff, like 1 week later, was on the cover of all these magazines.
Let me get to Senator Cotton.
I'd be like, no, hey, why don't you
right.
just sit at your little desk and do your little
what
work?
If you're
they're just obsessed with Bannon. I think they're jealous of Bannon.
It's all inside baseball.
Yep.
It's all in speak. Look, it happens in every presidency. I remember the media being obsessed with Jody Powell and Hamilton Jordan. That's how far back. In fact, they were actually on the cover of Rolling Stone, which was the beginning of the celebrification of the American political American political consultant, and now they have achieved full-fledged status as celebrities.
Mm. Yeah, well, and I think whether it's someone like Cheney, who became the demonic figure
Absolutely.
For the left, and now it's Bannon, or it's Halliburton, or it's Koch brothers, or it's Scooter Libby, or it's there's always there's, one person
there's,
who's
always got to be a there's always got to be a bad guy in every storyline about the presidency. Is that
at Valerie heart, Jarrett.
American media are romantics, and they believe in good guys and bad guys, and usually the bad guys are unfortunately conservatives, but that's how it goes.
Right. Well, yeah, they didn't really have much of a problem with Valerie Jarrett. More the conservative media did. So,
or going ballistic about Trump's policy about immigration. But when Obama rolled back the wet foot, dry foot policy that has been official U.S. policy since John Kennedy was president, nobody said a word.
Yeah, right.
Here are people fighting 90 miles of open sea to escape communist, murderous communist thugs and get to America. And if they got to America, the policy was wet foot, dry foot. And Obama rolls that back. I don't know if it was for religious reasons. But he rolls that back, and nobody says a word. But now Trump tries to engage in policies which most people agree presidents have used extraordinary powers to defend the American people. FDR certainly did it during World War II. Abraham Lincoln did it during the Civil War. John Adams did it. Is that the left goes ballistic? But it seems to me that they're it's kind of situational.
The left is making a lot out of the and some on the right are as well. And Bill Kristol has had an aneurysm almost every day since I don't know a year and a half.
Who?
Exactly. Who? Exactly. He's not editor of the Weekly Standard anymore either. So Trump goes on with O'Reilly, and he did this interview before the Super Bowl. And O'Reilly, O'Reilly knows how to make news. He's known this for, know how to do this. So he asked Trump a question about Putin. Let's listen.
Do you respect Putin?
I do respect him.
Do you? Why?
Well, I respect a lot of people, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get along with him. He's a leader of his country. I say it's better to get along with Russia than not. And if Russia helps us in the fight against ISIS, which is a major fight, and Islamic terrorism all over the world,
right?
Major fight, that's a good thing. Will I get along with him? I have no idea.
He's a killer, though. Won't. Putin's a killer.
A lot of killers. You got a lot of killers. Why, you think our country's so innocent?
What was your reaction to that, knowing?
It was fine up until he made the moral equivalency argument between the United States and Russia. Look, Reagan also was romantic. He saw the United States and America as a force for good in the world, and he saw the Soviets or Russia as a force for evil in the world, and that it was our moral obligation to stand up to Soviet communism. So everything was fine up until that last point.
Well, my point on that is, number one, we're not in 1983. Andropov is not president. It's Putin. I can't stand Putin, as you know, and I hope he has a shorter tenure than we would imagine he would have. So it's not 1983 anymore, but it's I think we always forget that Trump's not a political person. He's not somebody who's read all of your books or it doesn't mean he's not smart, but he's not steeped in the ideological underpinnings of the fight against communism. He's a New Yorker.
But most successful presidents are political.
Yeah, well, I mean, Obama was political. I don't think he was successful.
Well, I said most, not all.
Yeah. Well, but
Lincoln certainly was political.
Mm-hmm.
Reagan certainly was political. Franklin Roosevelt defined political.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not political, I think he needs to become political very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean not political. I just mean he's not going to speak like the more genteel politicians speak. And
that's got to be instinct. Is that if you're president of the United States, or as you do, or as I do, we believe that America is the shining city on the hill.
No, he believes that. He believes that.
For moral good.
Yeah, he believes that,
though. I think he needs to go out and clean it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think I think this is where the furious pace of everything works against him in this scenario. I think he needs some time here to pause, refugee pause. I think... Just pause.
Well, all right. There's a very good presidential anecdote here, Laura, that he should learn from. Harry Truman once said that a president's job is to say yes and no, but mostly no.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump needs to say no to interview requests or to overbooking on his schedule. He needs time to stop and think, just think things through or talk things through with a few trusted confidential aides. Is that the best presidents are surrounded by strong individuals, and he needs to be surrounded by strong individuals.
That's a great point. That's just a phenomenal point. I'd turn off TV. Turn it off. There's nothing to watch anyway. It's not going to make your life any better. It's not going to make your job any easier. Turn it off. But I've said this for a long time. Unless it's something where you're galvanizing the public to your point of view on something, I think Twitter can be fine. But just as he's not a pundit. He's the president. And he doesn't need to act like a pundit. Every time someone says something or criticizes him, he doesn't need to respond via Twitter. It's just it's pointless. It's a pointless endeavor. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I think also he's got to realize is that this is oversimplification. But he's no longer running for office.
Yep.
He drives the news. They don't drive him. He drives them. And so sometimes it's better to say fewer things and tweet fewer things than to say something all the time and tweet all the time.
I don't think Mike Pence had to be on 5 Sunday shows on Sunday. Less is more sometimes. Just I agree with you. I think we're seeing all of them too much.
All their currency is being devolved.
Dissipated.
Overexposed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Craig, great advice. We really appreciate it. Can't wait till Reagan Rising comes out. Craig Shirley on The Laura Ingraham Show. Stay with us.
The Laura Ingraham Show.